I can't wait to that to get out in the literature. It's so important. Okay, topic for this presentation is effect of policies to promote firearm dealer and owner accountability on firearms trafficking. And my co-authors are Jan Bernick and Maria Bolzicelli. I borrowed this slide from my friend Garen Wintemute because I'm not going to go through all the details on this, but it depicts the legal and illegal market and basically how they are connected and shows how guns ultimately get to criminals. The important thing, excuse me, in my opinion, is to note that the retailer plays a key role in that initial diversion, often as far as straw purchases are concerned, or direct sales to traffickers or sales to prohibited individuals. One study that looked at ATF investigations of gun trafficking found that the single most prominent channel of diversion of guns into the illicit market was through a corrupt gun dealer. Other research has examined crime gun traces and found that 1% of gun dealers account for over half the guns subsequently traced to crime. Garen Wintemute has done a lot of research in this area and published a study back in 2005 that tried to examine what are the things that determine the likelihood of a gun after sale being traced to crime and how different dealers are distinguished. And when this initial data came out about how few gun dealers are connected to so many crime guns, the response from the other side was always, well, certain gun dealers simply sell a lot more guns. Well, Wintemute's study found that, yes, indeed, there is an association, but it really does not explain the vast majority of discrepancies across dealers in terms of the likelihood that any gun that they sell will subsequently be traced to crime. Leading to the obvious question is, might this be due to differences in sales practices? There are a few studies, longitudinal studies out there that have shown that when there is increased scrutiny of gun dealers, that it could deter the practices that enable guns to get into the hands of criminals. We published a study last year in injury prevention showing that after the cities of Chicago and Detroit undertook a series of undercover stings of some of the suspect gun dealers in those areas and also filed lawsuits against them, that there were very substantial reductions in the flow of new guns into those criminal markets there. As far as in-state dealers, the drop was 62% in Chicago and 36% in Detroit. We also published another study last year looking at the interesting case of Milwaukee, in which it was in right outside of Milwaukee where there was a gun dealer there that was number one on the list, had the most guns subsequently traced to crime. And back in 1999, there was a fair amount of publicity surrounding that. And a couple days after the news broke of that, the dealer decided to voluntarily stop selling small and expensive guns that some of us might refer to as Saturday night specials or junk guns. And subsequent to that, there was a reduction in the flow of new guns into the hands of criminals by 44% citywide. And then there's also a study in the literature by Anthony Braga and Glenn Pierce that looked at an anti-gun trafficking initiative that in part focused on gun dealers, but not exclusively, also showing longitudinally a very substantial drop in newly trafficked guns into criminal commerce. I believe last APHA, Jan Vernick presented some of this data, but I wanted to just, it's what we use in the study, so I just want to summarize it here very quickly. Jan, did the extensive legal research to look at a number of state laws relevant to not only the regulation of gun dealers, but other gun sales provisions as well. He found that 17 states require gun dealers to be licensed in the state. If you're curious, if you want to know what, how many states require licensing of cosmetologists, people who like do your nails and stuff like that, the answer is 50. So 12 of the states require local governments to issue the licenses, and 5 do it via the state. However, 6 have absolutely no eligibility requirements. 3 have no record-keeping requirements. And it appears as though, at least for a handful of these states, it really appears to be just a mechanism to generate a little more state revenue. There are 9 additional states that require record-keeping by gun dealers and allow police to inspect dealers. 21 states permit gun dealers to be inspected, and 2 mandate them, Massachusetts and Rhode Island. But 24 states have no licensing or record-keeping requirements whatsoever. We were very interested in enforcement, and it's interesting to know what the laws are, but perhaps it's not all that interesting if they're not really being used. So we undertook a survey of all state law enforcement agencies, as well as local law enforcement agencies in the states that require the regulation by the local government. We identified the units that did that sort of work and got them questionnaires. Some of the information required them to compile some information, so we gave them a little bit of time to do that and recontacted them. We didn't get data from some of the states, but it was clear from what, you know, our communication that we had through our screening process that if we didn't get anything back from them, that really meant that they weren't really doing anything. And sort of the modal general response that we got from these agencies was, we don't do that. That's ATF's job. So for this study, we combined the legal information that we collected along with the enforcement information and are doing a cross-sectional analysis of the association between laws and enforcement and trafficking. Our trafficking indicator comes from crime gun trace data for the years 2000 through 2002, and we define a trafficked gun as one that was recovered within a year of its retail sale in which the criminal possessor was not the purchaser of the firearm. Just to briefly show you some of what we found through the survey, again, not many states doing very much here as far as oversight. There were 8 states that reported that they regularly do audits, they check inventory and sales records, and 5 had some specific policy of how frequently they inspect, but generally not a lot of action. Some did undercover stings, but generally, again, not a lot of oversight activity. So here's some of our regression findings. The first model, we started this endeavor really kind of focused on the gun dealers. We've been doing a lot of work in that area. We want to first just sort of take a look at what the regulations do. And our approach to this, I think, perhaps is a little bit different than some other researchers in that some laws only really kind of make sense or variables only kind of make sense in combination with others. So you're going to see that we combine certain things together. So we look at here, for example, having strong dealer oversight laws and regular audits of inventory and sales, that there's enforcement. And we see a significant fewer traffic guns by in-state dealers in that situation. We then look at other kind of regulations and add those effects to the models. And most significantly, there's a very strong negative association between regulating private sales. Again, the general notion of accountability here, in this case of the private gun owner. Interestingly, although one gun a month laws are getting quite a bit of publicity these days and pushing by advocacy groups, we found no effect. However, this is in-state trafficking. When I talk to ATF agents, about this issue, they generally think of bulk purchases only really relevant for interstate trafficking. We next add a county level proxy for gun ownership, the ratio of firearm suicides to total suicides, and our effects from some of our policies are diminished somewhat. The dealer oversight laws and regular audits is no longer significant at the 0.05 level, but still in the expected direction. Private sales, the magnitude goes down substantially, but it's still significant. I still struggle about whether it makes sense to include gun ownership in this model. It's a very complicated relationship, dynamic relationship, in which how many gun owners are in an area probably determines not only how many guns are going to be available for trafficking, but also the likelihood that they're going to pass many of these measures. So it's a fairly complex relationship. So another question is, well, we looked at what effect does this have just on your own, whether guns in your own area get trafficked or not. But is there a net effect realizing that guns can go across borders? So we then sort of lessened the restriction on our outcome variable, so it doesn't matter if the dealer's in-state or not, as long as it was a trafficked gun. So here we see that, again, when you just begin the process looking at dealer oversight laws, that it's negatively associated with fewer trafficked guns. When you add in the private sales regulation, they actually have a somewhat stronger effect, and the effect is no longer significant. If basically you look at all of these things in combination, which if you've talked to anybody who works in this area, they say you need oversight of gun dealers and you need to regulate private gun sales, you find that, again, you have a significantly fewer trafficked guns regardless of whether it's in-state or out-of-state. And regardless of whether you control for gun ownership levels or not. Limitations, self-report data, the regs are correlated with other perhaps unmeasured gun laws. We didn't look at every single gun law. There are a lot of them out there. Most importantly, probably, is cross-sectional data. We weren't able to look at change. However, the findings generally are consistent with the longitudinal studies I mentioned earlier. And the other limitation I mentioned is basically how to treat this gun ownership variable in the model. Conclusions that I draw anyway are that comprehensive gun sale regulations and oversight are associated with fewer trafficked guns. Isolated regulations perhaps may not be all that useful in and of themselves, but only as a more comprehensive system. Restricting bulk sales don't appear to be important for intrastate trafficking, and higher levels of gun ownership appear to facilitate diversion of guns to criminals. Yes, sir. I considered corrupt gun dealers and unregulated gun shows to be the two main sort of nexuses of where how guns get diverted into the illicit market. There's a great article this year in Injury Prevention by Garen Wintemute where he showed, again, I think consistent with some of the research that I'm showing here, that in California, a place where private sales are regulated, he did very extensive observational studies, found no real evidence of illegal sales that could be observed, whereas he went to several states where those sales are not regulated and saw multitudes of illegal sales. So they're very important, but it's not impossible to do something about it as far as regulation. Yeah. I'm saying is that from the trafficking investigations, to me, the thing of greatest interest is at what point and how does a gun get diverted from legal to illegal commerce? Because once it's in the illegal market, it can change hands a bunch of times, and it's almost impossible to do anything about it. So it appears as though corrupt gun dealers, again, and gun shows are two very important places in which that diversion occurs. Yeah. Sure. We didn't find any effect from it. This was a self-reported, do you ever do this kind of thing, as opposed to when you went out and did this, what happened. In our research, where we looked very specifically at a fairly substantial number of undercover stings, we found a very profound effect on the illicit market. So it may simply be a difference of, yeah, we one time did a sting 3 years ago, as opposed to, you know, what I was measuring in the other study, which is a very, you know, well-orchestrated, broader effort to put dealers on notice. You better watch yourself. Sure. Yeah. We did not look at state size, but we did look at proximity to how close you were to other states, and specifically how close you were to concentrations of population. So if you're very close to a border, but there aren't many people right around that border, is maybe not as relevant. So we did control for that in the models.
I just want to thank our panel. It was great. So.